And now, on with the show.
Hello, one and all. Welcome. Come in. Come now. Come listen to us. It's Film Fracas.
I'm leaving.
Episode 5.
Without Brett.
Season 4. The penultimate episode of the season. Are you ready? Are you ready?
No.
Are you not entertained?
Not really.
See, that was a movie quote, because this is a movie podcast. I am your host today, Carter Spilliards, the one who spills yards, you know, knocking around yardsticks left and right. With me, I have, to my right, Shannon, not Ellen Ripley, Ellen Ripley Widener.
Quite good, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. I have, Robbie the Robette DeShazer.
What does that even mean?
Like if you had a band and it was like
Robbie and the Robettes.
And the Robettes, but you're a Robette. You're not actually, yeah, Robbie.
I've always talked about if I had a band like that where I got my name first and then everyone else just had to be something else, like late night show style,
yeah,
I'd be Robbie DeShazer and the Cheese and Crackers Band.
Ooh.
And the Cheese and Crackers Band.
Would there be like part of them be cheese and part of them be crackers?
I mean, we'd have to decide.
Or would they be cheese and crackers each one?
I feel like they'd probably be cheese and crackers each one, but I'm willing to negotiate.
Difficult. See, I'd think your band would be Lil Robbie and the Robettes. Then you guys would break up. Then you'd form a new group called the Robettes. Then they'd break up again. You'd form a new group. It'd be Big Robbie and the new Robettes.
There you go.
There we go.
I don't know who that was
because they haven't been introduced.
I have no idea who that was. That mysterious
disembodied
voice just
speaking
from the void. It was bizarre. I was uncomfortable for a moment. There was a chill in the room,
mm-hmm,
and I thought I saw a dead relative just run by.
It's like a brisk October chill. This is the
it is spoopy season.
The first of Halloween.
The first of it's spoopy. And speaking of spoopy, there's no one spoopier than Brett the Rock Johnson.
I'm here.
He's there.
He's coming,
yes,
at you
alive.
He's sitting right there.
He is in the land of
Brett the Rock Johnson coming at you live.
Live and unfiltered.
Uninterrupted.
Uninterrupted.
Undead.
Unfettered. Unkempt.
Oh.
Unscrupulous. Unscrumdiddlyumptious.
Undermined?
Undermined? Would that just be
undefeated?
Undermined?
Unencumbered.
Oh, a good word. These are all good words.
Uneducated.
Oh, no.
We know for a fact he's educated.
Unexplained.
He has a college degree.
Really?
Understood.
One more than you, Robbie.
One more college degree than I have?
Yes.
It was funny. Today I was just talking about dropping out.
Oh. Oh, no.
I'm too close. I'm graduating in May.
I was going to say, you're very, very close.
I know. It was more in the sense that if the place I'm currently interning for were to offer me a full salary right now, if I just dropped out, I would absolutely do it because I love my internship.
And what did they say?
I did not say that to them.
Oh, okay.
I said that to my girlfriend.
Oh. Who actually owns the company, so.
Yes. I mean, she is the CEO. She's not.
Just the two of you are the only employees, right?
How do we pay the bills?
How do we pay the bills around here? All right.
We're literally a mom and pop business because my mom and pop pay the bills.
Back to biz. The biz.
Biz Marquee.
Business. Business.
We have an episode to do.
We're talking about story.
Oh, yes, we are.
The things that make the world go round. I've been avoiding it because this is going to be a particularly tricky episode as we have three great movies. Shannon, what do we have left?
We have The Lion King. Mm-hmm. We also have The Dark Knight.
Yes. Yuck.
And then lastly, we've got Back to the Future.
Yuck. Yuck, yuck.
Yuck, yuck.
Yuck, yuck.
Ya.
Ya.
Ja. Yas.
Yeah.
We.
See. I was talking about this with potential future guest host, a coworker of mine. We won't talk about it. He was like, well, you ended up with three major popcorn movies, so they're very heavy on the story, and they're also very crowd-pleasing with their stories.
I was going to say, no one's going to be happy at the end of this.
Yeah, no.
No one person will be happy. Maybe we should just skip this one. Just talk about whatever we want, and then pick a winner from the three, and just do that.
I wish
just
we could,
draw out of the hat, and
but
be like,
unfortunately,
you know,
or they're all winners.
Unfortunately, we hit record before discussing a potential other topic. So
well,
and as we all know, hitting record cannot be undone.
That's true.
Ever.
So
there's been never an
ever.
Edit in any of this.
No,
ever.
Fully unedited.
Fully unedited.
Yeah.
If we could just put in a cut right here to me suddenly speaking,
yeah,
that'd be great.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're talking, and we're back.
I'm leaving that in unedited.
I hope you do.
So we just sit there and talk about a cut that's going to happen.
Then again, you already seem like I've lost you, Brett. We're 10 minutes in. I can't have already lost
you. So here's what I'm thinking, because we have such an odd episode.
Not an odd, just a difficult one.
So let's set some parameters.
All right.
Or, like, talk about that, because we can sit here. What this will end up being is us gushing about these three stories.
We're not allowed to say anything positive.
Okay.
No gushing.
Done. I won't say a single positive thing this entire episode.
Well, no, you have to speak. You have to speak in only positive.
No,
the rest of us get.
It's too late. I've already made up my mind.
Too bad.
I already said.
Too bad.
I already said.
Too bad.
As we said with the recording and such, we can't.
I mean,
and don't we can't undo it. So
it's true.
True.
I said it. I got to do it.
True. Truly.
I'm not saying positive things this entire episode.
Oh, fuck the deer. Let's set up some parameters. What are we looking for in a story? You know.
Not garbage. Like, yes, all three of these
not
movies
garbage
are.
Would be.
This is.
It's true. This
he did
is
say
how
he's
it
not
starts.
Saying a positive thing. All right. We can do this. We can do this.
Narrative sense, decent continuity. Looking at all three of these movies.
Are you gonna say nothing? Are you only gonna say negative things, or are you just gonna be passive aggressive?
No positive things.
Okay. I was really hoping you'd just be like, unlike some movies.
Unlike some movies I know of. They take place all in the present, thank you.
Presents for suckers.
Or some movies have humans, so.
Some movies have sound.
Some movies, you know, don't have Batman.
Okay, so. Narrative continuity. We're looking for good continuity. We're looking for.
Good story.
So I feel like we've talked about satisfying endings before. I don't know if that's necessary.
I would just say a satisfying narrative. Like, the ending doesn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah, satisfying is a little too subjective of a term.
Very subjective.
Yeah. It's like,
all
does
have
the
hours.
Ending
like,
make
yeah,
sense?
So, like, yeah, like, is it just, oh, like, Deus Ex Machina, take care of everything, or, like, just, yeah, does it make sense? Does the ending, like, yeah, like Carter said, things shouldn't come out of left field and just be like, oh, we're stuck. Oh, surprise, here's something convenient to move the story along that
like if
was never there and is never seen again.
If, like, Mufasa's ghost had come down from the sky and been like, no, Scar, and just fought it and then, like, took him back up into the sky.
Yeah,
you might be like
something.
Not
well,
a
that
good story.
You might
random.
Be like, well, that was a bit much.
Yeah, or like, if in Back to the Future, it's just kind of like, oh, man, how am I going to get back to the future? And someone's just like, Marty, I have some plutonium. Do you want some? You're like, oh, wow, perfect. That wouldn't be like,
right.
No, that'd be bad.
Or if right. In The Dark Knight, Batman was like, what? I brought my parents back to life? Crime is gone? There's nothing left to do?
Yeah, like, stuff's got to make sense. Stuff's got to make sense.
I feel like the steps between there would actually be fun to watch, though.
I mean, like, it probably would, but just if it just happens.
So, yeah, I think we have a good understanding of what a story is. I don't know if we communicated it well to the audience, but
it's basically, do the interactions between the characters make sense? Does what they're doing, is it, you know, good in the first place? Which we could kind of establish all three of these movies are, you know, good enough to have gotten this far. So I would hope that the stories are entertaining.
Entertaining is not a question. Like,
yeah.
We know well, they're
just
entertaining.
Saying, yeah, no, I was saying that's a given. But
in
that
the
is
past,
something
there have
you would
been
look
other
for.
Story episodes yeah. Where I've have not been
yeah.
As entertained.
Like, the story might not be entertaining, but it's well in other technical aspects, and that's how it's, like, gotten so far. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, yeah, it was.
But
these,
the
final three are the epitome of watchable.
I was going to say,
oh,
out of this,
yes.
They're really, like I said, they're all winners
oh, yes.
At this point.
Yeah. I don't know.
But
if you're a Philistine, maybe.
A Philistine? Isn't that insulting to the Philistine?
Wow.
Let's take some controversial stands here real quick.
You got a hot take, Brett?
On the Philistines?
I just said I'm not saying anything positive, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hit me with your...
Worst shot?
Your worst shot.
No.
Oh.
You know what? I'm going to have to tell my second cousin, Balthazar, about what you said.
About the Philistines?
About the Philistines.
Well, I'm going to have to tell my second
wow.
Cousin, Phyllis, what you said about the Philistines.
Ooh, even better. Even better. Let's start the fracas.
This is a coincidence.
Woo!
Because I have both a cousin named Phil and a for Phyllis and a cousin named Balthazar. And they're best of friends.
I thought you were going to say you had one named Phyllis and one named Steen.
I was like, well, you know, the cousin's Steen. Steen. He's never been quite right.
He's Steen.
He hates his parents.
Steen.
I was like, hey there. Hey, Phyllis. Hey, Steen.
Hey, Stein. It's Steen.
Steen. Chocolate.
Chocolate.
I remember when they first invented chocolate. I was eating it.
Chocolate.
We're all a bunch of Steens here.
We are.
Maybe you guys are.
So Back to the Future.
Yes, Back to the Future. Good job picking a movie to start
Shit
with.
Story.
Shit
Next
story.
One.
Moving on.
The Dark Knight.
Shit story. Next one.
The Lion King.
Shit story.
Move Next on. One. They're all losers. Season over. All
right, let's vote.
Let's leave.
All right, my vote is going to be for...
Pulp Fiction. Correct.
Pulp Fiction. There we go. Yeah.
I'm voting for Before Sunrise.
And who's got the prestige? I guess that would be me.
Oh, I'm voting for
Singing in the Rain.
You took too long. You're out of here. Get out. No. You're off. It'll never be shit. Just like your father.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, Back to the Future.
Yeah, what about it?
Let's talk about its story. Let's actually get into it.
I'd say this movie has a pretty good story.
I would say so, too.
It's just okay.
Just okay?
I mean, okay. So... if you take out the time travel aspect.
I don't think you can.
Shit story. You take out one piece and all falls apart.
No.
You take out the main mechanism.
Moving on.
No, what I do love.
Get it out of here.
The Dark Knight. You take out Batman.
What I do love is that this story. It's quite clever, which I like. And it's not overly clever. Like, it's not trying to be like, ooh, look how clever we are. Like, look at how this worked out. Like, sometimes I feel like. Some other movies that play with time, something like Memento or something like that, where they're like, look how clever we are. All this time manipulation worked out. And
right.
But
right.
This one, they're like, no, it's pretty straightforward.
No, it's very straightforward.
There's just a time travel element to it. And even then, the time travel rules aren't overly complicated.
Right.
It's not like, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, suddenly the time-space paradox is going to destroy the universe.
Except like... they talk about that kind of stuff, but they, like...
yeah, but
like,
you don't have to worry about it.
It's dumbed down.
Yeah.
It's implied. Like,
exactly.
It has all the things from literally every time travel movie. It's just... It's very localized.
Yeah, it's basically... all you have to worry about it is, like...
Marty's parents.
Marty's parents. They have to get together or else he's going to vanish.
Yeah. But
which
the
is,
thing I...
yeah.
Pretty simple.
It's simple, but it has... it's elegant in its simplicity, if that makes sense. Like, it...
yeah, sure.
It's... I feel like it's more enjoyable because the stakes are localized. By the time, you know,
like, yeah,
things start happening to Marty, you care about Marty. Like, there's...
well, as with any movie that's got, like, some major sci-fi aspect, I always think the best ones are the ones that aren't about that. It's about the characters dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if the movie was about the time travel, and like, oh my gosh, you know, this is such a big deal, we're time traveling. But it's not about that. It's about his parents, and it's about him.
Right. And Marty finds himself in a predicament.
Yeah.
That predicament is he is stuck in 1955 and has inadvertently caused himself to stop existing if he doesn't.
So it's not, like we said, it's so simple that it doesn't have to get bogged down in the details and it can just move along with the entertaining story that it's set up for itself.
And it sets up a ticking clock for itself without being, I mean, it has some obvious moments where you keep watching like the family disappear from the pictures. But it's not, you know...
it's not anxious.
It's not anxious.
The stakes are high, but it's not, like, excessively morbid or anything like that, which I quite enjoy, with the exception of, you know, the conflict of, you know, will Doc survive? Will he not? Is he, you know... spoiler alert. But, I mean, you know, seeing him die right off the bat, I guess, might be the only exception to that. But, I mean, it gives a sense of immediacy to it, and the fact that Doc is present throughout the rest of the film.
And much more, like... because the majority of the relationship between Marty and Doc you get to see is in, like most of the movie, is in 1955.
Exactly.
And so...
exactly. So we're happy when he does...
when we see Doc again, like even though we know he died in 1985, it's nice to see him again. You get to see that relationship still play out. Because then all that death serves for is really just a reason for Marty to go 88 miles per hour in that parking lot.
Yeah.
Like he's not just, you know... doing donuts, and that's what...
well, and what I like... yeah.
Who hasn't done donuts at 88 miles per hour in the parking lot?
Marty just dicking around in the car. All of a sudden, he's like, Oh, that's right. It's a time machine.
Oh, no. I built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Wait.
This is heavy. Yeah, no, I've always... yeah, it's good that you get this, like... You don't get the, like, anxiety of it until the very end when you're like, oh, no, the lightning's coming. And then, like, the cord is...
Yeah, you get two at the... You get the lightning with the cord. Yeah. And you get Marty playing the guitar, and it's like, hurry up. Like, he's... Yeah. He watches his hand disappear in front of his face. Like, I'm gesturing like the audience can see it, but...
Oh, they can.
Good. That's the... You know, you get a little bit of anxiety of, like, just fucking kiss already. Yeah. Like, at this dance... At the enchantment under the sea dance.
And then they do.
Enchantment under the sea. Where I first kissed your father.
Your cousin, Marvin Barry.
Yeah.
I think you're going to want to listen to this.
So, we joke about that, and there's, like, implications of, like, a white man writing Johnny B. Goode, like, stuff in there. But, like, let's talk a little bit about, like, just... There's fun little things with, you know, playing between the 80s and the 50s that there are things that are very different about them. And there are things that are, you know, very similar. It's the idea of parallels and, you know, that's definitely played out throughout the whole thing. Seeing, you know, the town that Marty grows up in being pristine and, you know, the church and porn store at the end of the street just once used to just be a movie theater instead of two separate businesses. I assume they're separate businesses.
I mean, I would hope, but I mean, I...
No, you gotta get the young people. To the church, and then, somehow.
Just put a porn store
Brett,
up.
That's sounding a little positive. Yeah. Watch yourself, sir.
It's an explanation, possible explanation, Shannon, so calm down.
Well, that's a little positive on yourself, if you could, you know.
Wow, if you could.
I'm defending
myself. You could keep it a little
myself?
More negative,
whoa, whoa, whoa.
Sir.
Defending yourself is positive. Let's
what? Let's put
remind
that
everyone
there.
That you are the worst. Please hate yourself for this podcast.
I don't need this podcast to help me hate myself. I already got that going, Robbie.
Sounds like a BoJack episode.
All on my own.
So, yes. But no, there's a lot of fun stuff. You know, it takes the idea of... Mm-hmm. It has some hard sci-fi elements with time travel and stuff like that. But it takes it and it makes it a character piece and, you know... What?
Is time travel hard sci-fi?
I'd say yes.
I thought hard sci-fi was the stuff that is, like, actually, like, somewhat possible.
I would say that it is in the sense that, like, instead of just being, like...
I think Back to the Future is much more soft sci-fi than it is hard sci-fi.
Okay.
That seems like a fair classification.
I mean, yes. Yeah. I would
but
say,
I would call it would sci-fi over fantasy.
I would say time travel isn't necessarily hard sci-fi because that has a different connotation. I'd say it's an indisputable science fiction element.
Yeah. Yes.
And like, it also, you know, I was really more thinking about it from the stance that it's not, it's a time, it's like, there's some idea of real science behind, like...
It's integral to the to the story that's how the whole
H.G. Wells the time machine takes time travel and just like this is a fact whereas this is a little bit more like I experimented for years and it runs on plutonium and there you know
I get that
but
Back to the Future anything Back negative about Back to the Future story wise what are we thinking
I mean it is ultimately just kind of a love story it does a lot of stuff to kind of play with convention and it's definitely a fun kind of formula, but there's just something like really conventional about it. Because there's this whole time travel element which makes it a lot of fun, but it is very much like, ooh, these two people have to fall in love, and that's it. So it's very simplistic, and it doesn't need to be overly complicated. But I was just saying, if we're comparing it to the movies that we're also talking about, two of them have, well, one of them at least has a very complex story, and the other one's got... kind of, and also moderately. I would say that the other two movies we're talking about have a somewhat more complex story. Yeah,
the other two have somewhat heavier movies, I may.
What I would say is, once again, I don't know if complexity is, you know, always a pro.
Not always, but I would just say, like...
It's something that will be...
It's like, just a factor.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's what you're looking for.
But, like, we're not saying it makes it inherently
less than anything. It's not a lesson movie. It's just different.
That's why I think we talk about this every time we do a story episode, which is I don't think that it's about whether a story is simple or complex, but I think it's about how it communicates the story, how well it communicates the story it does. Because you can have a movie with a complex plot that does a shit job.
Oh, yeah, no, totally.
You can have, a movie Batman with a simple plot. You can have a movie with a simple plot
call
that
excels. Complex?
It's got a lot of moving parts.
This is not complex. A lot of moving parts, all for different machines, and none of them are good.
Exactly. It's like, complex, but it does a shit job.
It's overly complicated, but it's horrible.
Except it's so straightforward, but it's not. Like, no. Exactly. That's a whole different...
But here's where, you know...
Next season, Batman vs. Superman.
I think yeah, Back to the Future is a little straightforward. There's, you know, here's the thing we ought to do. It sets up a ticking clock. It's, you know, there's a love story. But everything feels resolved. Yeah. It has a great ending. Like, you... I feel like the...
It ends on a cliffhanger.
It does.
Does it really? Like...
yes.
I mean, it does... Like,
it ends on a tremendous cliffhanger.
But here's the thing. This is one of the things I want to talk about. I don't think it's a bad, like, if you never got Back to the Future Part 2, it wouldn't be an upsetting cliffhanger.
I would probably be a little
upset. No, I think yeah.
I would say that's definitely
really?
An upsetting cliffhanger.
It's like, oh, there's something wrong with his kids? What's going on?
I would be intrigued, but still satisfied knowing that there's something else. I don't know that I would necessarily need to
see
like it.
This is the thing I've been talking about recently. We just did a... Where I work at a production company that makes kids content. We just did a brand deal for a toy company, and we end with a stinger of introducing another toy into the mix. But you never get to see that unboxed. You never get to see that. It's fine because it leaves the viewer to just imagine. You could cut it off there, and yeah, you can be like, "Oh, he's going to save his kid." But like, the implication is there's just more adventures to be had with the unlimited possibilities of a time machine, right?
Like, that is true. Like, you could have that, but when it's like made to be something so specific as not just, oh, Marty, hey, I'm back, let's get in the time machine and go have adventures, it's, hey, you and your girlfriend, you guys are apparently married or you had children and your children have a serious problem, get in the time machine, grab your girlfriend, we gotta go.
It follows it up with very specific
I would say it's different.
Specific doesn't mean bad or like,
yeah, I wouldn't argue that it's necessarily bad because there's no life or death stake or similar kind of, you know, because like, okay, we know that we see that Marty is alive, we see that everybody that we've grown close to in this film to some extent is accounted for. There's no question as to whether, you know, I mean,
there's a chance,
you know,
Doc's
I guess
dead.
there's a chance that somebody's dead, I suppose, but it, you know, it's ending on an upbeat way. It's ending very excitedly.
Because what you're skipping over when you talk about, you're like, yeah, it starts with your kids, you know, we got to do something about your kids. But then it's, you know, we don't have enough road to get to 88 miles per hour. And then it's where we're going, we don't need roads. And then the car, you know, you're like, oh, wow, there's a lot going on here.
It's exciting. Like, and I hope they make a sequel. Golly, I hope they make a sequel.
It works as a beginning to Back to the Future Part 2, more so, like, your kids part is definitely for Back to the Future Part 2, because that's where it starts off, like, just getting that out of the way. That is where, you know, you get that whole scene once again played out. But if they had left it there, I think you get that tagline at the end, and that's what makes it a satisfying cliffhanger and not, you know, upsetting if you never watched another Back to the Future movie. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Jen, were you going to say something else?
No, I think I'm trying to think of other cliffhangers when I've been like deliberately kind of, you know, pissed
Pirates
off
of the
Caribbean 2. Yes. Pirates of the Caribbean 2. You read my mind.
Hell of a cliffhanger. That's what I was thinking.
Incredible cliffhanger. I mean there's no will they won't they implication because obviously
They are.
So, I don't know. That was all I had. But
I
take it away.
I'm in kind of both boats a little bit because I think I disagree with you that it's a satisfying cliffhanger. I don't think there's any such thing as a satisfying cliffhanger.
I mean, as satisfying as a cliffhanger can be.
By its nature, it's supposed to leave you wanting more. I think it works in this movie because there are some movies that will end with the cliffhanger without resolving, like, that movie. So, like, The Hobbit 2. ends on a cliffhanger, that the resolution of that cliffhanger is also the resolution of the film you just watched.
Correct.
And therefore the film is dissatisfying, and it's a dissatisfying cliffhanger. Yeah. But Back to the Future, the first movie resolves itself, and then they're setting up, this is where it's going next.
Or where it could go next.
So I disagree.
I mean, in the production process, they were already making 2 and 3.
I disagree that it's one of those cliffhangers that you can say, oh, I wouldn't care if they didn't make a second one, because that one definitely is one where you're like, oh no, I really want to see where this next one is going. It would be extremely upsetting if they never made one. I think there's a difference between...
I disagree that it would be extremely upsetting, but...
I think there's a difference between an open-ended movie and a cliffhanger, because when you were describing the thing that you made, that sounded more like an open-ended ending, which is just they go off and keep doing whatever they're doing, which can also work quite well. But it's different from like Pirates of the Caribbean would end open-ended, because Jack Sparrow's off doing his thing, and Will Turner and Elizabeth are living happily ever after doing their thing, but that's not... You know, that's not a cliffhanger. It's just you naturally assume they're going to keep going and doing their thing. But with Back to the Future, I do think it's 100% a cliffhanger, but it is a satisfying cliffhanger because the story of the film is already resolved before they introduce this new where it's going next.
So in that case, do we disregard the cliffhanger we're talking
about? No, not at all. I would say all of this to say it's just something to be considered, because it's not... I would not say it is a net negative on the film, but it's definitely not a net positive, because any kind of cliffhanger, I think by its nature, can kind of hurt a film, because if a second film was never made, I think it would be, it's one of those things where you're like, well, we will never really know, and that was very deliberately like setting up for the next one.
Yeah. So does it almost walks the line between an unsatisfying cliffhanger and just an open-ended ending.
Yeah, because it's an intriguing cliffhanger, because it's one that definitely makes you want to... Because there have been cliffhangers where you're like, I don't care to see the resolution of this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this is definitely one where you're like, oh no, I want to see where this goes. It's just because it's an... And you have to disregard the second film, because
that's
how we look at these in a vacuum.
Correct.
And so it's one of those things of like, this has a lot of exciting possibilities as to where it was go. I would be very upset if they didn't make one. And so a cliffhanger by its nature kind of hurts a film.
Yeah.
But it's not like a, you know, hook, line, and sinker. I would just say it's more of a negative than a positive.
Yeah. Because I would agree, if we can not, for the purpose of defending this cliffhanger in the regular sense, but just to, you know, explain, Back to the Future 2 ends with a much worse cliffhanger.
Yes.
And that, you know, Marty gets gets a letter from Doc saying he's in the Old West and that he has to somehow get there. And you're like, what?
Yeah, that's very one where you're like, where is this even coming from?
Also because those two, you know,
yeah,
it's the issue that happens when the second and third movie are filmed at the same time and with, you know, really one script made.
Well, because, yeah, with this one, it already establishes when he gets back that Doc says he's going to the future.
Yeah.
But then he's all of a sudden already back and you're like, oh no, something's wrong.
Well, yeah. Already, but he could. That's the thing.
The thing is, like, as the viewer, he's already back. And so you watching it are like, oh no, something's wrong. He's already back,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
That's true.
So that's why I'm saying it is overall a negative for me, but it's not some kind of like sink the ship. Oh no.
Yes.
Get it out of here. Yeah. Worst movie ever made of all time.
Also,
no, that's not
where Back to the Future Part 2 should have ended, if you ask me. Is Marty saying, I'm back, Doc. I'm back from the future. That's your black out there, not everything that... it's a point I've been making for years, that Back to the Future Part 2. Well, maybe my favorite entry in the series. I know that's not a popular...
Easily my least favorite.
I've never seen 2 or 3. I've only seen the first one.
I have...
I don't have any strong desire to watch 2 or 3.
2 and 3... All the whole trilogy is great. I love it.
Well, I'm hearing...
least favorite. I still like it.
Nah. Yeah.
What I'm hearing you say is that it's bad.
Of the three, it is my least favorite.
Yeah.
I'm a big proponent of the third one, which a lot of people don't like also.
I've never seen it, so...
I think it's
so
fun.
Did you contribute anything here?
Yeah, where do you weigh in on story, Brett? What are your negatives for Back to the Future?
Yeah, I'm going to be nitpicky about it since we do have three such strong movies. Yeah,
we can't really afford to.
But
not.
Yeah, so I'm going to be nitpicky here. I'm going to get out my forceps and my scalpels and tweezers and such and whatever. Carter kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, how like it is just kind of like, it is a very straightforward love story that has time travel in it. And when you get down to it, like, there have been movies with time travel before that have had more or less similar premises, because basically anytime there's time travel, it's always, oh no, it's either, oh no, we got to get back to the right time, or, oh no, we got to save the world so we can get back to the right time or something. And so it's just kind of, that's just kind of, that's like just kind of like the nature of the beast when it comes to like time travel and time travel movies and media and that. It's kind of the actual like story of it can get a little repetitive, but Back to the Future does do it in such a nice, like clever, just like fun, easy way to where like it's like, yes, this kind of story has been done before, but this feels fresh even though it's been done before. And then also, as is the nature with time travel movies, when you do start looking at it, the continuity things do kind of start to rise up after a while. Like, Marty spends all this time with his mom and dad back in the 50s. He's clearly very important to them, very, very important to their lives and how they end up. And then you come back to the 80s, and it's like, oh, hey, Marty, our son, who looks just like the guy that got us together when we were kids. And it's like, it seems like something that would raise a flag somewhere here or there. Just be like, huh, that's really weird. Or like, yeah, that's really weird. And just like, oh, like the Kevin Klein, the Johnny B. Goode stuff. Like, it is funny. Calvin Klein. Yeah, my bad. What did I say? Kevin Klein?
You said Kevin Klein.
Yeah, I like different. I like Kevin Klein. What
Kevin Klein,
I say?
Also great.
Kevin Klein, come on the podcast. Love to have you. I love Dave. It's great.
I do too.
That's such a good movie. But yeah, the Calvin Klein, the Johnny B. Goode, like that kind of stuff. Like, well, it is nice. It is fun. It's like, but shouldn't somebody somewhere along the line kind of like talk about that? But then I also understand it's like you don't have to have somebody say something about it, because that really wouldn't serve any function and would just be shoehorned. And sometimes a gag is just a nice gag. But when you do take a step back to get the perspective and you do start being nitpicky and these kind of things come up, there are things that at least I think have to be considered. I know you'll probably disagree with me, but that's kind of where I'm at with all this right now. It's fun, but it has also kind of been done before. But it
is
very fun.
Here's where this is the point that I hear from both of you that I think is disregarding something about the movie, which is saying that it's a love story with time travel. Like, I feel like either we need to decide that it's a love story with time travel or that time travel is important, because you can't have, it can't be the secondary element and the issue, or, you know, and the crux of the film or something. You know, does that make sense?
Well,
what I'm hearing is that, oh, it's a love story with an element of time travel, but all the but these are continuity errors that come from a time travel. So, is it a time travel movie, or is it a love story with a time travel element? I think it's a time travel movie, which we can talk about your criticisms with continuity and stuff. But I feel like we need to do it.
Well, all of the continuity stuff I don't care about, because I find it's, like you said, it's just a gag.
Yeah.
It's just a joke. Yeah. And it doesn't need any kind of great, you know.
Yeah, and that's...
explanation.
That's what I was saying. Like any explanations would just be shoehorned and totally unnecessary.
I would think if you're talking...
It adds to the charm of the film.
Like, I would say that... When I say it's a love story with a time travel element, if you're talking like the archetypal film, it is a love story. That's what it is. And then what differentiates it from any other love story is that it's got this time travel element. Because if you're talking about The Dark Knight is a good versus evil story. Okay. But it's got, you know,
it's got
all of these other things. It's got all of these other things in it. The Lion King is a man versus either... Well, you could either say man versus, like, government, or man versus nature kind of thing, depending on how you want to perceive Scar and or the hyenas. But they all, at their archetypal base, are one of these, you know, simple stories. It's just what differentiates it from other stories that would do that.
It, like, it's a love story, but it's also a time travel movie. Like, it doesn't it's not a zero sum game.
Right. And that's not what I'm saying.
It's like talking about whether Star Wars is sci-fi or fantasy and everyone thinks you have to pick some kind of side.
It's both.
Like, and it's a time travel movie. It's a sci-fi movie. It's a love story.
It's
like,
a space opera.
It's fine to be
Back to the Features.
Oh space. No, not
space. It's fine to be both. I view it more as a time travel story with a love story element to it, mm-hmm. rather than the other way around. Because if you take out the time travel element, it's not the same movie, you know.
But if you take out the love story component, then Marty ceases to exist. So
Do you get what I'm saying? You can still have the story of
damn.
No, you don't have to. You don't have to have the love story element.
Shit.
You don't just have the love story element to it, because you could just have Marty and Doc hang out in 1955 and Marty fucks shit up while waiting for a lightning bolt to strike. Like, you could have that. Like,
yeah. I was just
the
saying,
love story. So I feel like it is a time travel movie with a love story element to it because it adds a layer of complexity to it.
I was just saying that
difference.
The love story is supersedes the time travel in that, like I said, if the love story is not pursued, then Marty just ceases to. So that's the primary focus, is that these two people have to fall in love.
Well, if you take
and
out,
then
well,
he travels,
yeah.
back to the future.
What I'm saying is that you could have it without the love story element, and so I think that
would be sad without the love story. Because
right,
because granted, like, he wouldn't, assuming he doesn't mess anything up, so he doesn't have to worry about all that. Still, even if it was just like him and Doc like hanging out, trying to get back to the future, has this great time, but like is also like. That's also kind of a big deal, trying to get back to your time, man out of time and everything. Then he goes back, and then he's just back to his regular shitty life.
Right. Which is what?
That would be so sad. I don't think I would want to watch that.
Yeah, you guys are making my point, which is that this movie has a great story because it could have just been that.
But what I'm saying is, if you take out that, it's not Back to the Future anymore.
Right. We're saying the same thing, Carter.
No, because what I'm saying... Is yeah. if the movie is Marty just goes and plays around in the 1950s and then goes back, that's not Back to the Future anymore.
That's what I'm saying.
No, so the love element is crucial to the story, is
it
what I'm saying.
Right.
So that supersedes the time travel element.
Well, yes, we're past that. What I'm saying is that this movie could have been just that, and the addition of the love story is what makes it Back to the Future, is what makes it a good story, is what makes it a better movie.
Therefore, it's crucial to the story.
Right. I'm not arguing that it's not crucial to the story.
I think I've lost the original point you were trying to make.
I'm not arguing that it's not crucial to the story. What I'm saying is, the whole time, is it's crucial to making this story great.
That's why I was saying that the love story supersedes the time travel element.
Right, and I've never said that it doesn't supersede...
Yeah, you were saying the time travel supersedes the love story. You were saying you were saying that the love story takes a clear backseat.
I never said it took a clear backseat.
That's the implication I was.
Well,
that was a very strong implication.
Let me clear it up then. If that's what you guys were hearing from it, let me clear that up, because that's not what I've been saying this whole time. Is yes, it couldn't be the love story without the mechanism of time travel. This movie requires time travel in order to work in any capacity, because there's, you know, Marty doesn't fix. I mean, if it was that Marty fixes his parents' marriage in 1985, and that's a very different movie, right? Even more so different than Marty getting stuck in 1955. What makes it better than just a time travel movie is that love story element. And the way that it is a great story is that they play so well together, but I don't think that it's a love story with a time travel element. It's a time travel movie with an element of love story that makes it great. Does that make sense? Like,
I feel like we just ran around in a circle.
Yes, but I feel like we were talking about the same thing. We're just coming at it from different.
Yeah, I think we can. I think we can safely move on.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did I step over?
No, I understood what you were saying. I just think if we keep going back, we're going to kind of go in circles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's best.
Does my point make sense?
No, your point makes sense.
That's what I was trying to say from the beginning. I don't know if I minced words or said something that was like.
You kind of, yeah. No. It just, when you were talking about it, it sounded very much, you were like, oh, you know, because you said that the love story is like a secondary element to this time travel story. And so that's where we were thinking,
you were kind of disregarding the love story as the crucial. Because to me, the crux of the movie is the love story, because if it doesn't happen, then Marty ceases to exist. And so that's why it's more important than the time travel, and why it's fundamentally a love story and not fundamentally a time travel story. Because something like The Time Machine is a time travel story.
Something like Primer, if any of you guys have seen Primer, that is a very much like, that's a time travel movie, and it'll be damned if it is anything else. And that movie was
like, the entire focus of the movie was Marty having to fix the DeLorean to get back, then I would call it a time travel movie. But because there's this added element kind of supersedes that, it becomes
And the reason I say it is because it could be a love story romance movie if George McFly was your main character or something, you know. But because it's crucial to Marty getting back to the future in a full sense that his parents stay together and that he didn't, you know, he unfucks up the situation, it's a part of his objectives in getting back.
No, that's why I'm saying it's the element of time travel, and that's what that's crucial. That's why I was saying it's.
But this movie, like I said,
we're going back in circles.
Yeah, you guys have gone and done the thing you said that we shouldn't do.
My point is the movie doesn't exist without time travel, and I felt like you guys were putting it in a clear backseat when I don't think it is a clear backseat. I think they work as.
I think we both have partners that varying levels at which we regard.
Let's just move on.
But anyway, I actually talking about the cliffhanger aspect and whether or not that was important. Overall in the story made me give a lot of thought to the ending of The Dark Knight. And while
are we just moving on to The Dark Knight?
Yeah, I feel The Dark Knight is kind of what's fixating on me right now.
Mm-hmm.
Just real quick, when are we going to get our Back to the Future spinoff where Marty opens a garage to fix cars?
Never.
Damn it.
Michael J. Fox has Parkinson's now, and it would be a very hard movie for him to get.
Damn, I was hoping for like a Cake Boss.
It's not real sad.
Well, yeah.
It gave me that realization. I'm very sad.
But CGI exists for a very good reason.
Yeah, see?
Just get a CGI Michael Fox.
Somebody do the mocap for Michael Fox. I'm Marty McFly. This is my garage.
No, just get Michael J. Fox. Okay, like, don't worry, we're going to CGI your Parkinson's.
No.
I like the idea of someone wearing a mocap suit, CG to look like Michael J.
Like Andy Serkis, perhaps?
Andy Serkis is Michael J. Fox.
I remember, this is off topic.
Starts crawling around. Marty McFly, going back to the future. Let me fix your cars. Marty, why are you crawling around on the floor like
that,
man?
Crawling around on the floor, and when did you get this accent?
It's me, Marty McFly. You got a DeLorean? I'll fix it.
Okay, let's move on, please.
Shannon, what were you saying about the end of The Dark Knight?
Sorry.
The ending of The Dark Knight. Okay, so it's not... I guess it's not strictly speaking a cliffhanger because we see this evolution into Batman, you know, becoming the Dark Knight with all of, the Batman. The Batman. But, you know, taking on this added responsibility of being, you know, like a communal punching bag for Gotham. I get closure. Just feels like the wrong word, but it is closing the story to some extent. I mean, there's a finality to it. We have explanation for the entire title and all the events that have worked their way through the movie. But I don't know.
It's clearly not the end.
We know it's not the end.
I think I totally get what you're saying, because it's like, okay, everything has been resolved. This movie is open and shut. But then like Batman just like kind of like, he does drive off with everyone's chasing him, and it's like, oh, that's kind of rough.
And I can see it segueing into something else.
This is not the end of Batman's story, but not in a way that you couldn't have another movie.
To me, this is the perfect example of an open-ended movie. This is one where the ending does not, you're not like, it commands, because the Dark Knight is a movie that you could watch
on its own.
And you would never need a sequel because you know that Batman just keeps going on.
But that is also kind of sad to be like, Batman's
so
like
satisfying.
Batman's
so
a straight up bad guy.
Yeah. But it's one that it doesn't like, it's not instantly like, because I would say Batman Begins, which is not the one we're talking about, does have a direct cliffhanger of introducing the Joker, and you're like, oh, this is obviously where they need to go next. But whereas The Dark Knight is like, it ends and it has this open ending, but it, like I said, like any good movie with an open ending or a good cliffhanger, it resolves what's going on in the movie first.
Yeah, when you were talking about cliffhangers and open ending, the two movies that came to mind were The Dark Knight and Infinity War.
Yeah.
Because Infinity War has an open ending.
It's resolved.
But everything has been resolved, and it's like, oh, okay, so like there is somewhere for it to go.
I could argue that Infinity War isn't a cliffhanger, but it's...
It's not a cliffhanger.
Not a cliffhanger.
I fully disagree with that, but we can talk about that another time.
Fuck it, different frack. Infinity War, Marty McFly's garage. Let's go.
Okay, but this
Which one are we talking about?
None of them. Can we talk about the? Sorry, this episode's just already gone long, and part of it's my fault. Right. But I feel responsible.
God damn it, Robbie. No, I'm just giving you a hard time. Okay, sorry.
Because we still have two movies to talk about, and I fully disagree because Batman, who is your main character, your protagonist, he is clearly, even if we're talking about The Dark Knight as a whole, is at his lowest point. He is ripe for redemption, which is why you need that third movie. Yes, you could say, oh, he goes on for, he goes on forever and just lives in the shadows for, he wanders, does the Old West. He just wanders off into the distance and he's never seen again. But that's not what this movie sets up. This movie is
It almost to a degree is setting up, like, have we reached the point where the world doesn't need a Batman anymore?
But it's not, I don't feel like that's a point that's resolved in this movie.
It's a big point of the movie.
I know.
A big point of the movie, but I don't feel like it's a point that's necessarily resolved.
What I'm saying is this is not a movie that, like, while the movie is, once again, it goes back to the open-ended versus the cliffhanger. This movie is open-ended and definitely establishes that, yes, there is stuff we can go through, in a next film, but it's not dissatisfying in its ending because it's got this ending of like Batman will continue. Even if he's a criminal, he'll be there when he needs to be.
Yeah.
He'll keep fighting crime. Or if it's the point where, Gotham doesn't need a Batman anymore, perhaps this is the end of Batman and he can just quietly go into the night. Because we're not talking about Dark Knight Rises and where it goes, but it's like,
I feel like it leaves too many questions to be considered fully open-ended, which is that, not necessarily in the stuff it's very similar to Back to the Future, and that yes, there is a story that is resolved and all the conflicts that are happening in the movie are resolved, but there's a lot of questions about what happens next. I can understand watching, because I can watch both Back to the Future and The Dark Knight on their own and understand there is more to come. I don't need to watch that right now. Same way that I can watch The Dark Knight without having to watch Batman Begins first, even though it is a middle chapter,
I mean, it leaves, big questions, like overarching, the nature of Batman.
Yeah, it leaves, big philosophical questions.
But not story questions. Because Back to the Future leaves story questions of, what is going to happen next in this story.
Yep.
Batman, it's more like, oh, do we need a Batman? What does it mean to be Batman?
Like, what does it mean to be good? What does it mean to be evil?
Because, like I said, I would say the end of Back to the Future 2 is more analogous to Batman Begins, where it ends with the Joker showing up and then being like, ooh, there's this new threat. We need to take care of that.
Right.
So that's a cliffhanger leading into oh, yes, we'll have to deal with the Joker. Yeah. But Dark Knight ends with, like I said, the Dark Knight could just end. The Dark Knight Rises doesn't need to exist. And it's it could just end, and it is a sad ending, but it's still an ending, and it's a satisfying ending.
Yeah.
And it just kind of goes on from there. Like I said, to me, it's like the perfect example of an open-ended movie. Because lots of times open-ended movies either fall into kind of a cliffhanger where you're like, oh, I kind of wish we got in the next one. Or they're just they end and you're like, so what? But this one, you have stuff you think about, which is do we need a Batman? Where does he go from here? That kind of thing. So you would want to see a next one if they made another one. But it's also satisfying enough that you're like, no, this could be the end. And you just understand that he kind of goes and lives the rest of his life, fighting crime, hiding from them.
This
enigmatic force that the city embraced.
He goes on being Batman.
And so, so it's ultimately, satisfying while also leaving it open. So it's like the perfect open-ended ending.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay, we can move on from that. I don't totally agree, but I get what you're saying.
The rest of the movie, I always really liked this movie because of kind of the layers of it, because really the crux of the story belongs to Harvey Dent, which is interesting because you have two conflicts of you have in this movie is inherently Batman facing his own strengths facing his own weaknesses, I should say, because it's the Joker's whole thing is you'll have to kill me. And so it's like Batman questioning, will I have to kill him? And so him wrestling with, do I go against my most fundamental being kind of thing? And then you have Harvey Dent, who's like, you know, basically the classic fall from grace kind of thing. And it's like, because Batman is so focused on himself and so introspective in this movie, he lets this happen. And that's like his greatest folly in the movie, was not being there for Harvey and like not being able to prevent this from happening. And so I think it creates a more interesting kind of moral conflict that you don't really get in a lot of superhero movies.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
And so this one is definitely a lot more layered and a lot sadder.
Yes.
Because this one's ultimately about Batman's failure. Mm-hmm. That's what this whole movie... Batman fails and at the end has to say, I mean, put it on me. It's my fault. This is where we go from here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the greater good. Yeah.
That's where my stuff about cliffhangers comes. I feel like Batman's arc is clearly not over at the end. Like,
it is over. It's just a very sad ending.
It could go on, but
it's like Infinity War. It's a sad ending, but that's the ending.
Yeah.
We can talk about that later.
Starting to reach the end of that circle.
This is something we talked about before this episode even happened, before this season started, was I don't know if I like how... Are we going to talk about pacing at all in this category?
I mean, it's not really story, but I'd say that'd be like a holistic...
Can I explain what I'm about to say?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
We talked about the fact that you get to the Rachel and Harvey are in two different locations, mm-hmm. but you're always like, oh yeah, this movie's almost over. And it's really not.
No.
Yeah.
And so here's where I think that I have issues with the story is that I think it's too much story to packed into too little time, in the sense that
I think it's packed into a lot of time.
There's a whole lot of time in this movie,
but there is a whole lot of story. I mean, there's a whole, it could be two movies
essentially, because you're watching, You're watching it and you think to yourself, you know, this is wrapping itself. Like, this is the climax. This is the big conflict. And then it's clearly not over yet.
And I totally see what you're saying, but I think that's a good way of like subverting expectations. Yeah. It's like, oh, this seems like, it was like, oh, okay. So like, this is a sad ending, but it's like, they're dead, but like, we'll see Batman redeem himself in the next one. It's like, psych. No, Batman's got to take care of this. Right now, although I totally feel what you're saying, because every time I watch that movie, every time I'm like, okay, like let's wrap up this third act. Oh no, this is the beginning of the third act, and we kind of talked about with Scott Pilgrim in the last season how it's like it is paced very well overall. I say both these movies are very well paced, but there is like that one moment where things definitely kind of slow down before getting right back to it. And we all said we felt it at like the exact same place in Scott Pilgrim. So I totally see what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's definitely the point where the film like stops to catch its breath. And it happens in any kind of like huge movie like this. Because look at Last Jedi. Like the throne room scene is the end of the second act before the third act. And lots of people are like, why wasn't that the ending? And it's like, it also has a moment just after that when they all have to get to the planet where you're taking a breather. Right. And so any kind of huge movie like this, this is kind of the built-in like audience breathing moment before we like, rev up for the
soak it in, process what happened.
The issue for me, at least, this is one where you're not going to be able to explain. This is truly just myself.
Yeah, go ahead.
There are so many times where I've watched this whole movie and loved every minute of it. 3 out of 5 times that I watch this movie, I stop caring eventually. After, like, I just stop, you know, it loses itself for me. And that is not, I don't have a reason for it. It just,
that's a you thing.
Like, yeah, it
builds up and then it has that breather and it just never quite catches again for me. And this, similar to my distaste for Lord of the Rings, where I can just never get into it, I can't explain why it doesn't catch me again. But 3 out of 5 times, the story, even though it takes that breather, I'm like, why didn't this end an hour ago?
Like that happens. Like the last time I watched it, I was just kind of like, yep, this is the Dark Knight. This movie's going. There's Batman doing his thing. But that was just because I've seen it to death and all that. To get back to more of the story, I know I said I wasn't going to say anything positive, but Carter kind of touched on it with like talking about like the Batman Harvey dynamic. I really like just how it's not effortless because you can tell they put a lot of work into it. But just like Batman, the Joker, and Harvey, just watching like these three men just kind of like shift the landscape of Gotham and almost just kind of like rebuild and shape the city, and just seeing how everybody just gets caught in the middle in the crossfire of all that. I think it's very well done. And even if you think like it's too long or like it doesn't catch you, the fact that it's still able to like do that all without any like glaring like, hang on, that doesn't make sense, or like, oh wait, Batman just won the day because he's Batman, like you see in so many of the comic books, the way that it actually managed to just really do that and make it seem real.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I have to commend it for that. And then to go back to my regular negative state, only real negative things are, again, super nitpicky and like basically on par with like what I was saying about the stuff in Back to the Future. It's like there's sometimes like the way like Two-Face and the Joker, they're like things just kind of like happen and work out, like getting all those drums of gasoline and oil on those two different boats, and you're like, you're telling me nobody noticed any of this? No one did like a check before shoving off? Or like there's just like little things like that, but like it's just kind of things you just kind of got to roll with and just kind of accept.
I'd always just attributed that to, like, they probably paid off.
Like, yeah, that's what I...
Because the
like,
whole thing is, like, corrupt Gotham.
Yeah, I know. And so, like...
It's not hard to
And so, like,
some,
sometimes
like
I'm kind of
like,
oh, yeah, they probably did just pay somebody off. But,
at the same time, that's an inference, and we are talking about direct
stuff. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's, and so, but, like, again, it's not, like, know. It's not going to take me out of the movie. Just right. Be like, hang on, like, it's...
Oh, no. That's again, very it, cinema like, sins to be like it, how did they get all these oil drums?
Yeah, and it's like, oh, how did he get all these school buses to break out of that bank, and like nobody noticed these school buses and it's
like,
all that.
Clearly
it's
like, he's a villain. Like he has like, a plan.
Yeah,
some, like,
he has means.
Like, yeah, and so it's just kind of like me personally, it would be nice to just kind of be like, this seems a little convenient, but you kind of got to roll with it because it's like, yeah. It, again, it's like on par with what I was saying about Back to the Future.
What are you gonna do? Show a scene of
like,
the Joker
yeah, sure,
like
paying
someone
off? Yeah, no, that's something you wouldn't put.
Because, well, yeah, that goes to the character of the Joker. You don't want to
yeah,
know.
Like, yeah, you don't
want to
no,
process.
That's why I'm saying it's like it's super nitpicky, but ultimately, it's not gonna be like, no, this movie's a thumbs down.
Oh,
two
for
out
sure,
of five
he,
or anything.
No,
I'm
yeah.
The Joker clearly has a plan.
Yeah, we're all agreeing.
Yeah,
we're just
like, yeah, I'm just saying
we're propping
like,
up
yeah.
your point.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think
we love you, Brett.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything else.
Although now I do want to see all the deleted scenes of Joker. Just like, me somebody, okay, I want to buy all those school buses. That's a lot of money. No, I got money. Oh, cool. All right, cool. Bam. And he kills
the Joker's
him.
Joker's starting like, oh. a Slack channel to get all these.
Joker.
All right, guys. I need those oil
Picking
trumps on the ferries by 8 o'clock tonight.
Jim,
you're in charge.
He's like, all right, well, I need to get a couple of guys. Can I make sure I nail this?
Like, I would like to see just like maybe like a 30-minute short of just the Joker. Just like, getting everything.
Steven, I need more mannequins to practice the pencil
yeah,
trick
like,
on.
That's something about like...
Right away, boss.
Just a quick tangent, but that's something about like the comic book like universe that like always fascinates me. It's like, where do these guys get all these henchmen? Where do they get all of these gadgets and everything to pull off these
where's
master plans?
Where's D&D listing?
Like, yeah, where's the henchman convention? HenchCon or something where it's like... How do people know the Joker's gang needs people? Like, how do people
how
decide
you,
between the Joker
yeah,
and the Riddler?
Yeah, how are you a henchman for
like,
the Riddler? Or
like,
the, I've
yeah,
always thought
like,
about
there's
that.
There's a better benefits plan.
Like, do you think they
Joker?
Shared? Do you like, think are, it's
like,
a shared
like,
pool?
I truly like, do friends think... have rivalries in between, like, the Gotham
You think it's like gangs,
everything?
Maybe?
Like, but, yeah, it's just, that's something that always just, I think, is funny.
Yeah, that totally makes sense, Brett, but, like, we should probably just
move
on. This has been
on.
A very... I don't Lion mean King. To, like, step all over what you're saying. You made a great point, but, like, geez, this has been a long
yeah,
episode
let's...
already. So,
The Lion King.
The Lion King.
Lion King.
This movie, if I had to, you know... This one has, like... Let me spit it out. So, the story in this movie I find to be perhaps the least interesting. It's very straightforward.
If Back to the Future has elements that are the same as every other time travel movie, this has elements that are the same of every other Hamlet.
Yeah, this is like
let's. I mean, we can't get around.
I would
like
say,
we have to talk.
I would
it's
say,
Hamlet.
I would
but like,
say. Well, the thing that I'd say that The Lion King suffers more in this more so than Back to the Future of like conventionalism and like the same story being told over and over again is it doesn't do enough to differentiate. I mean, sure, they're lions. But
the lions are in a monarchy.
And then that's a given. And even then, the elements of Hamlet are there, but it's not they could have done more elements of Hamlet. Not necessarily made it more complicated, because it is a children's movie, and Hamlet's most definitely not a play for children.
Right.
But there
but it does lose some of the elements that make Hamlet stand out.
I would say definitely about halfway through, it kind of like, once he gets picked up by Timon and Pumbaa, who are, you know, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern kind of thing, it very much loses its Hamlet from there on out. And so it's like, after that, it really just becomes its own thing and kind of follows, you know, paint by numbers sort of to the end.
Inspiration, or he's found again, inspiration, take that Pride Rock.
I will say, I mean, the movie's not very long anyway. I will say, though, the story up until that point of, like, of the, you know,
conniving uncle
and taking over and the death of Mufasa and all of this, and how much they establish Mufasa as this regal, you know, excellent, you know, king, and how great he is. And that's why it's so crushing every time he dies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, because he's not in a lot of it, but they take the time to show you how important he is to everyone.
Especially to Simba,
which is why it
stings.
And so it's like, and so it's one of those things where, like, it's always tricky to do any kind of, like, adaptation of Shakespeare that's not, like, a direct adaptation. But
you mean, like, Lion King 2, Simba's Bride?
Anything. But
a direct adaptation of Romeo and Juliet.
But with the Lion King, it's like they nail the kind of Shakespearean death and like the weight of Mufasa's death and the kind of Scar's role as the conniving uncle, you know, kind of
treacherous. Is a better word than conniving here.
Why not both?
Both, yeah.
Treacherous.
So I definitely think it's there, but I think basically half the movie suffers from, you know, conventional. There's nothing like new and exciting in the whole second half of the movie.
I agree. So, thinking back to our world building episode, all of those things we talked about, like, oh, I'd love to see how that came to be. Oh, I'd love to see how, you know, Timon and Pumbaa met. I'd love to see Pumbaa's backstory. I'd love to see Timon's backstory. I'd love to know, you know, what Nala was up to while, you know, in the years in between. You know, all that stuff that we were like, oh, there's so much to see that's not in the movie. Does make some of the story suffer. Like, you could have made this movie a little bit longer to give us some of those explanations, to give us, you know, just stuff like that that we are missing because, you know, even though it builds a great world, it does, your main story maybe does suffer a little bit there because of it.
But then would that could easily turn into something like watching the Joker buy all of his stuff, just kind of like,
oh yeah, I'm just not like saying every single one of them tacked on
scenes. They're just there, just for like, oh yep, here's that. I don't think not seeing that takes away from the story or detracts.
I wouldn't
from
say
it
that
all
of them
all.
Do, but there's some where you know you have questions. You've got, you know, stuff that you think about, and it's not explained in the story. You know,
I don't necessarily agree with that, but like there could always be more in a story, but. I think with what I'm just saying, like based off of what they have, not necessarily what more I would have wanted to have seen, but if you're looking at the product they presented to us,
okay,
I would say like that's where my biggest problem is that half the movie is kind of uninteresting because you know going into it that Simba is going to
that cutoff point when he turns into a full grown lion,
basically when he turns, you know, the whole meeting Timon and Pumbaa and death of Mufasa, that kind, the movie up until that point. Has me, but then after that, there are other elements in Hamlet that are interesting in the second half of the play.
Also, surprise, surprise, other than Can You Feel the Love Tonight, you lose all the music.
That's true. You also lose the music. And so it's like, they could have done another song. They could have done another scene from Hamlet in the second half.
You got the pork luau. What are you talking about? That's there.
What's wrong with you guys? I'm just saying, overall, a lot of Disney movies kind of suffer from the second half not being as interesting,
because
others don't, like Beauty and the Beast, which is why that one, I think.
Except Beauty and the Beast also kind of has that problem of like all the music kind of.
That's true. It is very front heavy.
Yeah,
but there is.
But you get most Kill the Beast.
But you get a lot more stuff in the end, and so. But with Lion King, I think it suffers quite predominantly from the not having anything to do in the second half. But you know.
I think there's a little
win the day kind of thing.
I think there's a little more in the second half than you're giving it
credit
for, because you have because the first half is all about, like, yeah, it's Mufasa and establishing things. The second half is all, like, that's all, like, the story of Simba finally, like,
it's a very internalized and introspective kind of half.
Because it's, like, Simba's grown up, and it's like, oh, he's a happy, he's alive, haha, how nice. And then Nala comes back and is like, yo, you're the king. Everyone thinks you're dead. And then he's like, no, I'm not doing that, because he's still struggling. Like, he still blames himself for this. And you see he's, like, honestly, like, actually, like, being really selfish. Because he's like, Hakuna Matata, like, it's no worries. It's not my problem. And it's like, no, dude, this is very much your problem. And seeing him struggle with all that, and then Mufasa comes and talks to mm-hmm. him. And, like, that's, like, oh, sorry, I lost my train of thought real quick. But I mean, there's a whole lot more going on in the second half than you're giving it credit for. And you keep talking about how there's all this stuff in Hamlet, but we've said, like, it's not a direct.
No,
it's influenced by Hamlet. And, like, if you're saying, like, oh, there's all this stuff in Hamlet that it didn't use, you can also say the same thing about The Dark Knight, where it's like, oh, there's all this stuff from comics that they didn't use. And so that criticism can be applied.
Yeah.
In other places.
I would say...
But I don't... You make it sound like Timon and Pumbaa show up, and then you just kind of, like, clock out, and you're bored, and you fall asleep for the second half. But there's
definitely interesting parts. Like, I would say, to me, the most moving part of the second half is that conflict, and then ultimately culminating in the conversation with Mufasa. But,
and then he goes on to fight Scar. Well, he's still kind of blaming. He still blames himself. He's still utterly convinced that he is the reason his father is dead. But then he learns otherwise. It's like it's not like it just ends with Mufasa. That's like that goes all the way to the end. There is constantly something happening in the second half of that movie.
I mean, yes, there's constantly something happening, or else the movie would end there.
Yeah,
but
no, there's stuff happening. It's just, is it interesting?
Yes.
I don't think it's as interesting. I think it's a lot more. It's a lot more by the numbers. I think the conflict is there, but they could have gone a little deeper with it. Once again, that's tricky with a kids movie, but I've seen it done.
Like
Lilo and Stitch, I think has a deeper emotional conflict that is throughout the entire movie that you kind of see the whole time. But you know, with Lion King, it's there, but it's not as deep as it could have been, or it's not as present as it could have been. I think it suffers from its conventionalism, because it gets to a point where you're like, well, of course he has to go back because he has to save the day because he has to be king. And it all happens
exactly. He is the Lion King.
And it all happens exactly as you expect it to, and very paint by numbers. And I'm not saying it needed some major twist or major change, but they could have either had more to his conflict, or you could have seen him struggle with it a little more.
Yeah, because
it is kind of a mad dash from there to the end.
It takes a conversation to get him to get off his ass and leave the paradise of the grove or whatever it's called. And then he struggles a little bit more, but he's, you know, ultimately it takes a conversation or two to get him to go do what he's supposed to do. And we could have seen more struggle with that. We could have seen that internal conflict become a little more interesting. We could have...
Because you could have had him say, no, I don't want to do that, and then...
Something, you know... The Pride could try rapid expansion and come, you know, burn down the forest that they're... Or, you know, something could majorly make Simba shift his world, you know. It could affect him, really, and then he could, you know...
And this one he's very much like, well, I guess I had to eventually... kind of thing.
I guess after talking to my ghost dad and my girlfriend, like, I gotta do it.
Except he was all set to just stay there for the rest of his days. And you talk about, like, paint by numbers and being like, oh, well, of course he's gonna go back and do that. Like, you can also apply that argument to the Back to the Future. You know Marty McFly is gonna be okay. You know he's gonna go back to the future. That's the name of the movie. So.
Yeah, right. But what I'm saying is the path to get there, this one happens exactly as you expect it to. But, like, Back to the Future, he's almost gone. Back to the Future, they have that moment at the end of, will the cord break? Will he make it? Kind of thing. So there's more leading the audience to be, like, to, like, give you a greater sense of, like... Because there's no moment in The Lion King, even at the end when they're fighting, where I'm like, oh, no, is Simba not going to make it?
Right. Because
Scar has him there... dangling over the wildfire beneath him, right, all set to kill him, just like he killed Mufasa. That's very much like, oh, is he gonna make it out of this? And so say, like, oh, with Back to the Future, like, I don't understand how you can say, like, oh, Back to the Future, it works even though it's essentially the same thing that's happening. You know they're going to be okay, and stuff still happens that makes you be like, oh no, but it's still ultimately the same deal.
Like, why did Doc rip up the letter? Like, is he going to be okay? Can he get back in time to save Doc? Like, and even then, you have, no, Marty doesn't get back in time, and he watches Doc get gunned down again, which ultimately turns out okay, but there's still more moments of suspense in achieving those goals that are set forward.
So I would say to a degree you're correct that the like back feature
the back principle feature has, is the yeah, same.
It's the same,
which,
but
is
I would,
which is all that I was saying.
I would just say that the principle is the same, yes, but I would say Lion King suffers from it more so than Back to the Future.
Okay.
Shannon?
Come back to me.
I don't have much else to say.
Shannon, we're all pretty talked out.
Shannon, the second time watching, or the second in a very long time, I guess, the second time I watched it within the month, I really was compelled by that second act. And I think that's the hardest part, because I guess if you're looking at it on paper and you're charting this hero's journey, it does contain a lot of the structure is, it's pretty predictable. You know where it's going. And I think, but what makes me kind of pause from that, because there's not as much unpredictability, is just seeing the way in which it's done. You know, Simba being as introspective as he is, and especially the discussion between him and Rafiki. I mean, I can understand being like, okay, like I want to see him struggle with this more. I want to see him sit on this and kind of like, you know, wring his paws or whatever over this, if that's a thing. But I mean, this is a kid's movie that has to, it's being made for a certain audience and it needs to fit this audience. So I can see only struggling with it twice as opposed to, you know, five times being, you know, will he, won't he. That doesn't really, I don't know. I'm not as drawn by the fact that it's this long anguishing struggle, more so than it is, you know, that.
Yeah. And what I think 7 we're saying
minutes
is
of introspection that instead that of, got.
We're not saying it needs to be five times a struggle. What we're saying, at least this is what I'm saying. I don't want to speak for you, Carter.
Well, I'm,
is that those two times could be more interesting, yeah. Even
just a little bit. It could still more. Be too.
See, I thought it was pretty.
Yeah.
Compelling.
I think this is where we're getting into this the subjective about it.
I think you could really show, you know, Simba could have a moment where like he realized, like I said, he realizes, oh shit, I should have done something sooner because this is now actually affecting me and I can't say Hakuna Matata anymore. And you don't really get that. You just get Mufasa saying, remember who you are. This is your like responsibility. Like you're supposed to do this. And it's not
spelled out as it's not detailed, I guess, as much as it could be. Yeah.
I would rather
some people
see
want more the detail.
A radical shift caused by an outside catalyst than a gentle reminder that it's his job.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And that might just be where we differ, because it does worlds for me. But I mean,
and that's not to say that the moment isn't compelling. Like it's
right.
That's a sweeping epic moment.
Yeah, I think the moment with Mufasa is the most compelling moment of the second half of the film. Like I think that's kind of the shining moment of that part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the way you guys were talking, you just made it seem like you were just like,
oh yeah, like, no, yeah, whatever. Sorry, yeah, we just
that was just the
we
vibe.
Have to be
that was the vibe I was getting.
This is like you said, we have to be nitpicky. Of course, this is a good story. Of course, it is interesting to a degree, but we have to, you know. We have to
if we're comparing movie to movie to movie,
we have to talk
yeah,
about like, it.
Yeah. Yes, I know. I've been on this podcast.
Yeah.
Like,
who let you in?
What? How long have we been doing this? A long time, this episode. Okay. Does anyone have any? I feel like we're going to go back and forth on this.
Have anything else to say?
If the ending is interesting.
Yes.
I don't mean to rush us, but
no.
I also mean to rush us.
Lion King has a ending. It's closed. It's satisfying. It's
closed.
It's very good.
It has the most closed, satisfying ending
out of all three of these movies.
Yes. That's easy. It's a given.
Yeah.
It's not so, like
we were talking about the endings on all the other
Rafiki
ones.
Rafiki shows up and it's like, Simba, we have to go
your
back.
Your brother.
What?
Simba, you're forever going to be the bad all guy. Right. What?
In the proms tomorrow.
Let's go around and tell our winners of the week.
Okay.
My winner this week is, I'm going to say The Dark Knight. Just because, like I said, when you come down to it, it kind of perfects the open ending. I think there's a little bit more going on internally, which I think kind of speaks to the storytelling aspect. Because, like, with Back to the Future, it's... I mean, Back to the Future and Dark Knight are two very different... Those are my top two. Back to the Future and Dark Knight, two very different movies. But, I mean...
Way to give away your losers.
Like, honest. So, like, man, when like, it gets, why do we bother with the winners?
When it gets this high, it's... Or when it gets this...
Okay,
high,
keep going.
It's fine. Yeah,
keep
right, going.
Just, your winner's the Dark Knight.
Your winner's the Dark Knight.
There.
But, yeah, but it's just... When you get... Because, like, the... Back to the Future is a, you know...
Like, we get...
Jesus.
Yeah. Sorry, we have no time.
I know, no. Back to the Future isn't, you know, a very simplistic movie, which is fine. But they, I mean, they could have had a little more internal struggle. Batman definitely has internal struggle. Got a lot of it. It's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
My winner.
My winner is actually going to be The Lion King, because...
Apparently we're not all going to have the same winner.
Because, like... Even though it is a like children's movie, like it's very heavy, and it's done in a way that's like accessible to kids that they can understand, but it's also super compelling to adults and like our age, our demographic. Like the way that story is done, like they could have so easily made it so much more dumbed down or like unnecessarily complex. And you do get the really introspective side of it that is kind of lacking from Back to the Future. It's got that closed, like there's a beginning, there's an end, here it is, it resolves everything and anything that arises in the movie, which I think is really good. And while it is based on Hamlet, it does do enough to be like also the Lion King. People don't just say, oh, it's Hamlet with lions, it's the Lion King. Whereas it kind of sets itself apart.
I mean,
from,
I know people that would say that.
I do know people who say it's Hamlet with lions.
Most people are jerks, so and that kind of sets it apart for me from something like Back to the Future, which is kind of like we talked about it a lot, a love story with time travel in it, and I'm not going to go back on that, but my winner is The Lion King, and I hope you understand why.
My winner this week, for however many weeks in a row it is, it's literally my favorite movie. I'm sorry, it's Back to the Future. My reasoning here, and this is going to sound weird, and I hope you just bear with me, it's similar to a song that you love, you know, in the sense that you know every word of it, you can repeat it, you can think to yourself of the beats of the moments in this movie, you know, just from memory. And I live and breathe this movie some days. And I just don't feel like I can do the same with the stories from either of those other movies. There are definitely moments in those, but like, there's just nothing that is as a whole, just a product that I feel like I,
it's also, could... it's a movie that's easy to love.
Oh, it's
extremely lovable movie.
It's easy to love and it's made to be that.
Yeah.
But it does such an excellent job of doing that, and that's why it's burned its way into my memory. So my winner is Back to the Future.
Okay.
My winner this week is going to be The Lion King, mainly because it's an adapted story that takes variations that are very maturely done for a young audience. And even though it's pretty simple, and it's a story that's been told quite a lot. It's still, I find, very captivating. Once again, it fits a kid audience, but at the same time, it's compelling enough, and it's got mature, heavy themes packaged in, you know, what, an hour and 35 minutes or however long it is, and is still able to do so much efficiently with that time. Carter.
I might have let it slip in my winning conversation.
No. We're talking losers now.
But no. But okay. My losers week's The Lion King. I just think it doesn't quite. If you're doing, as I said, we all have great movies, but as if we're doing movie to movie to movie, I think it is the weakest.
Yes.
My loser this week is going to be Back to the Future. I find it to be the weakest. While it is great, it is so lovable. It is ultimately a love story with time travel, which we have seen before, and just we've talked about all this before, so makes me sad. But Back to the Future.
My loser this week is also going to be The Lion King, because Shannon put it out there. It's an adapted story, but I don't think it does enough to distinguish itself from the adaptation. The other thing I think about a lot is the point you both made that it has these heavy themes that are done for children or what, which the cynical part of me just says that's nostalgia glasses and going, oh, you know, the movies we watched as kids, they're so deep, aren't they? Like, really, like, there was stuff for adults the whole time. It's very, in my opinion, and I'm not wanting, you know, I'm not bashing, but it's the, definitely the very cynical side of me, because there's other times where I wholeheartedly agree with you. But
like, no, I've had those moments where I've gone back and watched a movie that I thought was so deep. I'm like, no, this is not. Yeah. This is,
and yeah, it's not as bad as some of those, but there's definitely, you know, an element of that. And I think that because of that, I can't see it as really that deep or mature for something else.
And that's where we'll disagree. Yeah. Life goes on.
And like I said, like Carter and I beat to death the idea that we don't like the second half of that movie. So,
My loser this week is going to be Back to the Future, actually.
I saw this happening.
Yes. I mean, we've given so much discussion and so much introspective thought to these films, and there's a whole not a lot that we haven't covered already. I see it's a wonderful film full of great spectacle, but, you know, I'm not going to give the same, you know, it's a love story with a time travel element that's extremely important, but I will. So that is my period on that.
Okay. Do we want to do a quick 30 seconds? Like, do you want to defend Back to the Future?
Or what, we're what, just, do? What we're going to do,
uh-huh,
we're going to break, we're going to talk about this.
Okay.
And then we're going to come back and we're going to do either a second round of voting, or we'll figure it out.
Okay.
But we are going to break, so just wait a moment. Okay, so we...
we're back.
We've broken. Oh, my legs.
We figured it out. Consultant. I hate doing it this way.
An impartial fifth judge.
This is...
Yes.
Yeah. This goes down with...
Really close to like jaw-breaking three impartial moments. Fifth judges, but...
Yeah. This goes down with jaw-breaking moment... Or jaw-dropping...
Oh, everything's broken.
Jaw-dropping moments, as I hate it when we have to do this, because don't...
Time.
We asked three people. Two of them said The Lion King was a better story. One person did not respond, but it didn't matter what they said, because two against one, regardless. So. So that means that, unfortunately, due to whatever reason, uninformed
we
of our...
We sat here for a very long time talking about reasons.
I mean, yes, but also, we can talk about it afterwards.
Yeah.
I have feelings about doing it this way, but it's
anyway.
Okay. So Back to the Future.
Gets on that train.
Yep.
Gets flown into,
goes into
a
the
closet
door,
and then its twin brother comes out and
doesn't come out
together.
Oh, and my person just texted Lion King.
So,
oh, there we go.
3 for 3.
All right, fracas.
To be went with shit, Lion King. So, there you go.
Oh, my other guy responded. He said Back to the Future.
Well,
one against three. So. Right.
Well, Lion King is more dramatically motivated. Well, Back to the Future is more comedically motivated. So So I'd say Lion King, since it plays on really classic archetypes and those sorts of drama tend to resonate more deeply.
Okay, we can talk about all these later, because we have to wrap this episode.
Okay, so Carter, recommendations. Where can we find
you? You can find me on Twitter at CA Spillers, like spill something you're at an S. My recommendation this week, my favorite Kubrick film. Doctor Strange's, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Great movie. Hilarious.
No idea what you just
said. No fighting in the war room.
What? Okay. You find me on Twitter and Snapchat at Brett, JHNSN, #1. It's October 1st right now. It's going to be October 3rd when you guys get to hear this. But each day of this month, I'm going to be watching a different horror movie. And so I'm kicking it off, and I'm going to recommend it. It's not particularly good. At least, I don't think so. But I'm going to recommend it because... starting to get spooky. 1994's In the Mouth of Madness by John Carpenter. It's got a whole lot of psychological Lovecraftian horror in it. It's got Sam Neill, you know, the guy from Jurassic Park. Everybody likes Sam Neill. And like I said, it's not particularly good, but it's not bad. It's part of Carpenter's Apocalypse trilogy with The Thing and Prince of Darkness. But yeah, go check it out. It's not bad. It's not great. I'm getting spooky. Stay tuned.
You can find me on Twitter at Robbie_DeShazer. I tweet stuff there. It's a good time. Follow me there. My recommendation this week is going to be the short-lived television show from 2007 to 2009, Pushing Daisies. Starring Lee Pace. It's a great show. It's a lot of fun. It's got a fantastic narration from Jim Dale, if you are into stuff like that.
The Harry Potter audiobooks?
Yes. But a lot of fun to watch. It's got a great cast. A lot of kooky characters show up. it's definitely worth a watch. So there you go.
Hey guys, you can find me on Letterboxd at Zed's Dead 5, not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4, but 5. And this week I'm going to be recommending the limited series on Netflix, Maniac. Watching it all right now. Great production design, very creepy, weird, bizarre, strange story. You don't have to like Emma Stone or Jonah Hill all that much, although it helps. But,
yeah, I was going to say, it always helps.
It always like helps, but very good, very compelling, crazy weird, would recommend, yes.
There we go.
That's been the episode. Cool. Goodbye. It's been long. Next week's our finale. We're going to have a very special guest.
It'll also probably be long.
Yeah, these are just getting longer and longer this season. Thank you for sticking with us. We love you guys. See you again next week.
Bye-bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. We know there are a lot of shows on the web, and we're really glad that you took the time to listen to ours. Thank you to Carter, the whole effing show, Spilliards, Robbie, the main man, DeShazer, and Shannon, Live Wire Widener, for helping to write and produce each episode. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating wherever you listen. It really does help get the word out. You can follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, @FilmFracas. Once again, thanks for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode.